Welcome back to your second episode for this week. I'm Ashley.
And I'm Curtis.
And this is Partners in Crime. So, now that we're back on our second episode for the week, I don't think we're ever gonna, well, okay, so I take that back. If we ever get, like, big, we'll do two episodes a week, but...
How are we going to fit that in?
Well, being unprepared to do two episodes in a week, it was a lot of cramming information.
I have to be honest. I think before you get to two episodes in a week, I think you should make it to one in 1 week.
Yeah, that's probably a good idea. It's late. Again.
Ashley waited to the last minute again.
It's true. There's a lot going on.
Yeah, it has been a pretty hectic week, actually.
Yeah, I'm not
going
to get into the details of anything, but we've got some stuff going on. So in our personal life, that's
true crime may or may not be involved.
Just no, it's not involved. no, we've just got some personal stuff going on. But here's your episode as scheduled. So Shane, it'll be there on Friday morning when you open up your podcast app. So
you're going to say when he opens up his peepers.
No, well, that too. But it'll be there. And yeah, so here's your regularly scheduled episode. So have you ever heard of Dennis Nielsen?
No.
I could be saying that wrong. It could be Nielsen.
Wow, it sounds like you're really prepared. She had 2 weeks to prepare two podcasts, and here we are not knowing names. I'm just kidding.
No, so this is actually recommended by your...
Okay. Yeah. Shout out to Kay. Thanks for being the best mod ever.
I say your podcast mod, but it's
not. No, my Twitch mod.
Yeah, I'm tired.
My Twitch mod, my Discord mod, my TikTok mod. She does it all.
Yeah. So this was recommended by her, so... Shout out to you. Thanks for listening. So Dennis Andrew Nielsen was born on November 23rd, 1945 in Fraserburgh, Scotland, to his parents Olav and Elizabeth, which I could be saying that wrong too.
Are you saying Olaf like the snowman from Frozen?
O-L-A-V.
Oh, I would say that's similar. Olav. I'd still say Olav.
It's what?
I'd say Olav still.
Yeah, so the two had married in May of 1942 against her parents' advice, and they had two sons, Olav Jr. and Dennis, and they had a daughter named Sylvia. His parents did not stay together. His mother and his siblings moved into his mom's dad's house, so his grandpa.
Right.
Whose name was Andrew. And Andrew kind of fulfilled the paternal role in his life, so him and Dennis were very close, and... A couple weeks before Dennis's sixth birthday, on October 31st, 1951, Andrew died of a heart attack out on a fishing trip. And this was, like I said, just weeks before Dennis's sixth birthday.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so it was like kind of a traumatic. So, and when they brought the body back in, the mom let him see his grandpa and told him that his grandpa was just sleeping. So he had, like, no closure. Like, it was like a funeral. Like, an open casket funeral.
But why would you just tell... Like, why wouldn't you explain it? Like...
Yeah.
What if he was trying to shake his grandpa awake or something? Like, grandpa, wake up.
The 1950s, everybody. So, oh my Dennis gosh. Had a drastic personality change after the loss of his grandfather. He would often go out to the sea and watch boats coming in and out, waiting for his grandpa to show back up. Which is just, like...
This is even sadder.
No, it's so sad. Sometime between 1954 and 1955, there was two different dates in the source material, but he was actually drug out into sea and became submerged in water. And he started to panic, and he slowly started losing oxygen. And it, for whatever reason, calmed him down. And he relaxed, expecting his grandpa to be there to save him at any moment.
Wow.
And his grandpa was deceased. So another kid noticed him drowning and reached into the water and pulled him back out. Shortly after this, Elizabeth, his mom, remarried. and they moved, but things were really never the same for him. And yes, this is tragic and awful, and you can definitely feel bad for the kid version of Dennis. But just a spoiler alert, he's just not somebody to feel bad for.
Just saying.
You can feel
bad. I feel bad for kid Dennis.
You can feel bad for kid Dennis. You're not going to feel bad for adult Dennis.
Well, I mean, his life is already so messed up. I mean, the poor guy.
Yeah, but, you know, we'll get into it. So during his mother's new marriage, she goes on to have four more kids with her new husband.
The 1950s, everybody. I'm just kidding.
So Dennis is kind of set aside and not really paid attention to him. Nobody really paid attention to him. He started to question his sexuality, and he began to feel like he might not be into women, but he really just wasn't sure. He decided to test out his attraction on males and females. And I'm just going to give everybody a sexual assault trigger warning for a few seconds. This does have to do with incest.
So we'll just wait a couple seconds.
Ew.
Okay, so if you were going to fast forward, you would have by now. So,
can I just stop you? And like, I just want to tell you right now that all I can picture Dennis as is this creepy guy that's sitting in like some rundown motel with a wig on and some makeup and talking about how pretty he is to himself in the mirror. I just want to let you know that's already the vibes I'm feeling from adult
Dennis.
Did
Kay like give you a spoiler? Like, just be honest with me.
No.
Okay.
But you know what I'm saying? Like, you're so pretty. You're so pretty.
No, it's nothing like that, but
that's all I can picture.
Okay. So anyways, one night he went into where his brother and sister were sleeping, and I'm not sure which brother it was or which sister it was, because his mom did have more kids. And he began fondling both of them to see how it made him feel.
While they were sleeping?
They were both, the brother and sister were both sleeping.
Like, how would you not wake up?
So the brother wakes up.
Oh.
And immediately starts calling him a hen, which is a Scottish term for girl. So he's like immediately like making fun of him. Like, why are you just doing that to me? Like, you're a hen, is what he said. Like, you're a girl.
I wonder if they call a boy the other name for a rooster.
Anyways, between the ages of 14 and 16, there were mixed source material on this age too. He enlisted in the army. His first placement was a city in West Germany called Osnabrück.
He went from using his army to joining the army.
He drank a lot of alcohol in these years, and he never had any sexual experiences, according to him. But he would often drink and pretend to be passed out, hoping that one of the guys he was partying with would make a move on him while being passed out.
What?
Yeah.
So he was pretending?
Like the moment of silence for that. He wanted somebody to basically take advantage of his drunk body.
This basically, dude friend zoned himself.
That you don't want to happen when you're drunk.
Oh, this is weird.
Okay, so let's move forward. During this time in the army, he became a cook and a butcher, which comes into play later on.
I was gonna say.
At one point, when he was stationed in Germany, but years like into his service, he hired a prostitute, and he paid her for his first sexual experience, and he was unimpressed.
How old was he?
He was, I don't know, probably close to 20.
Oh. I figured he was, like, much older.
No. It was, like, years, because he went in when he was, like, 16, and this was, like, a couple years in.
Oh, okay.
He had no experience in, like, his teenage years. So, right. That's what it said.
Other than his brother.
Right. Anyways. So, he said that he was unimpressed. He said that he felt the experience was overrated and depressing, and that he concluded that he was definitely a homosexual. He was not interested in having sex with women. So Dennis retired from the army in 1972, and when he returned home, his mother often talked about how she was concerned that he never showed any interest in women. And later on, while out with one of his brothers, he was publicly defending gay rights, and that caused a fight to break out between him and his brothers. And his brother went home and told the mom that he was homosexual, and that's why he hasn't found a woman to bring home, and that left a huge rift in his relationship with his family. I'm not sure if this was the same brother he tried to experiment with before, but either way, he left for London in December of that year, and he started training to become a police officer. So he found that he had a pretty strong attraction. So this is another weird thing. He found that he had a really strong attraction to the morgue and deceased bodies being brought in.
Ugh.
We're going there. I'm sorry.
Ugh.
So necrophiliac cases are probably my least favorite cases.
I'm going to stop you right there. It's not my least favorite.
It is?
No.
Oh, it is.
The kids.
Oh, well, yeah, I mean...
I would much rather do this than kids, but... Wow.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. This one's just up there on my ones that I don't really care for, but... it's a big part of it. But anyways, we're going to keep going into it. Sorry, we're already halfway here. So, he graduated from the police academy, but he never actually became a police officer. He went on to become a recruitment officer instead. He was considered a workaholic and had several failed relationships and began to think that he was not fit for relationships. Dennis had his first run-in with police, as in, like, criminal activity, not like he was in the police academy. So, in 1973, when a man named David Painter accused Dennis of taking photos of him while being asleep, he was so upset that he actually ended up requiring... to have some hospitalization.
Ew.
She was so upset.
I just thought of the weirdest thing about this whole case. You just said that he was taking pictures of that man sleeping, like,
imagine
psychologically he's messed up in the head because he thought his grandpa was sleeping. And he has, like, some weird, like, love for his grandpa. And he's, like, trying to recreate the feelings that he had for the love towards him. And that's why he's attracted to men, is because he was such a strong role model to him.
I'm just going
to
tell you. They actually determined that at the end of this.
Nuh-uh.
Yeah, that's actually...
Okay, everybody, what episode is this?
This is episode 9, and Curtis has cracked the code of true crime.
So here we go. I went from no true crime at all to cracking the case. You know what? So, let's change the name of the podcast to Cold Case.
I thought you were going to change it to Curtis's Case. And that's like Curtis's case with a K, like K-A-C-E. So, anyways.
Clever.
Anyways. So, he was, let me find my place here. So, police interviewed Dennis about, you know, what are you doing, man? Why are you taking pictures of David?
He was so pretty.
Anyways, nothing came of it. No charges were pressed. In 1975, he lived with a roommate who was also named David. Not the same David, though. He lived with him for 2 years, and there was no romantic relationship between the two of them, so says Dennis.
Does the other one say something different?
Probably so says David, but I haven't heard.
Oh.
I didn't see anything that said anything happened. But after the 2 years and David moved out of Dennis's life, Dennis kind of spiraled down pretty quick out of control. He was depressed, he was lonely, and he began to drink a lot more. On December 29th, 1978, he met Stephen Holmes, who was a 14-year-old boy, and he thought that he was 17, and they met in a pub. Which,
oh, no.
Why is a 14-year-old in a pub? Is that normal over there?
I mean, yeah, like a pub, you could do anything. It's more, it's. I don't think it's really considered the same here. Like, I've been to pubs before, and there have been kids.
Okay.
Kind of like a bar and grill. Like, okay. That's very similar to what it's like here.
Well, that makes sense. He invited Stephen back to his apartment, which was not uncommon for him because he had invited several men to his apartment, and hence the several failed relationships, and they just never wanted to stay. They fell asleep together, and when Dennis woke up, Stephen was still sleeping, and he felt like Stephen would end up leaving, like all the other failed relationship attempts he had experienced, and he felt an overwhelming urge to make him stay there so we wouldn't have to spend the new year alone. So Dennis took a necktie and he strangled Stephen until he was unconscious. He then drowned him in a bucket of water until he was dead.
What?
Yeah.
That was like double suffocation. Like, I'm gonna choke you out and then I'm gonna drown you.
Yeah. So Dennis, well, I mean, Yeah. So Dennis did things that I'm not going to say over top of his body, and then placed the body inside the floorboards of his apartment. He left the body in there for 7 months until he later took it outside in the backyard and burnt what was left of it. But that's a long time to leave a decomposed
body. Can you imagine the scent?
Living in. Yeah, the smell, the bugs, everything that comes along with it must have been really bad.
Everything that what?
Everything that comes along with it. Ooh. Anyways.
7 months of that, too.
So, not to mention if anybody else lived in the building.
Right, so like, how would they have not smelled that? So, 7 months. A dead body after a week is awful.
Yeah, so I don't know the total process because I'm not a forensic scientist, right? So there's different bugs that come for different stages of decomp. And there's always bugs. That's all I'm going to say. There's always bugs.
Ew. Yeah. Tell me that earwigs do not go in the ears.
They probably do.
That's the only way I'd now be afraid of dying is
well, they have to just take the ear, like the pinchers, and just pull the wax out.
Ew, get away from me. What is wrong with you?
Anyways.
You're about to end up on this podcast. Why would you say that?
Oh my gosh.
Just so everybody knows, I have a phobia of my ears.
He likes his ears played with.
Ew, get away from me.
In October of 1979, he met Andrew Howe in another pub, and he lured him back into the apartment. Andrew escaped after Dennis tried to strangle him, and he went to the police. And Dennis was like, no, I did not. And the police were like, okay, are you sure he did that? And Andrew was like, no, it's fine, he didn't.
What?
And just didn't press charges. But you also have to think, like, this was the 1970s. Like, was homosexuality accepted then?
Like, sorry, I might be mixing this up, but I feel it's even more weird that he just tried to kill a guy named Andrew, like his grandpa's name.
I'm saying.
That's interesting.
So, the name thing gets weird, too. Because his first and last victim were both named Stephen.
Huh.
Yeah. 2 months after he meets... 2 months after this, he meets a Canadian student named Kenneth Ackenden. He goes out and he gives him tours of London. They drink, they eat, they hang out. Eventually, he invites him back to his apartment. And while listening to music, Dennis strangles Kenneth to death with an electric cable.
What's up with the strangulation?
That's his MO. Like, that's what he does. He strangles. Wow. He strangles and he drowns. So, the next day, Dennis stages Kenneth's body in various positions and takes photos. He then faces the body towards the TV and they sit side by side and watch TV together in Dennis's mind. Even though Kenneth is completely deceased at this point.
Ew.
He wraps the body in plastic and he places it in the floorboards like he did with the first victim's body. And over the course of 2 weeks, he would pull the body back out 4 times to have conversations with it as if Kenneth were still alive. I wish this was a visual podcast.
I'm so sorry for the long pause. So. Yeah, I know.
5 months later.
This is disturbing.
Well, this is true crime. 5 months later, in May of 1980, Dennis was ready to attack again. He met homeless 16-year-old Martin Duffy. He killed this young man the same way he did Stephen Holmes, which was his first victim. He strangled and then drowned him. And then after he was dead, he sexually assaulted the body and proceeded to have a one-sided relationship, giving him compliments, talking to him like everything was fine.
Wow, I guess I really hit the nail on the head here.
You really did.
Does he wear a wig and stuff eventually too?
No.
Oh.
I'm sorry. I have a cold.
Spoke another one.
He stuck Martin in the wardrobe for 2 weeks.
He what?
He stuck Martin in the wardrobe for 2 weeks. And he stuck him in the wardrobe for 2 weeks before ultimately joining his body with Kenneth in the floorboard. Months later, the room smells awful. There's bugs, there's maggots inside the floorboards.
That's disgusting.
Basically, everything we just talked about is actually like his everyday problem. So it is as bad as it sounds. Like he's living with decomposing bodies. So it's bad.
Like, how big are his floorboards?
I don't know.
I mean, that's the crazy part to me is he has two whole bodies in there right now.
At one point, he has six bodies in his apartment.
What?
Yeah. I mean, just imagine that for a second.
Ugh.
So he tries using, like, fragrance sprays, bug spray to remove the bugs, but it's just getting out of control. And unable to control the smell and the bugs, he decides to dismember the decomposing bodies and dispose of them in the backyard like he did the first victim's body. And soon after this, the landlord decides to renovate, and he has to come up with another living arrangement. So his place, like his new place, did not have any body-storing amenities. Thankfully, he was forced to stop killing people for a while. But this did not stop him from luring men over and attacking them. So he just wasn't killing them anymore for a minute. He's not done.
Wow.
Yeah. And so, like, part of his process with the dismembering the bodies was that he would, like, the fleshy parts, the organs, the skin, stuff like that, he would flush them down the toilet. And I don't know if you know anything about, like, pipes and sewage,
yep.
But, like, that stuff does not break down.
Right. So I'm wondering, like, do they, well, I mean, I'm sure we're probably about to find out.
Okay. So I just wanted to throw that out there because, I mean, it's important. So, so he attempted to assault a man named, he was a Japanese man and his name was Toshimitsu. That might be really off.
Okay. Sorry.
And when he charged him with a necktie, the man fled in an attempt to get away from him, and he does. So after this, he has another man over who reported waking up feeling dizzy after a night with Dennis. He goes to the hospital with marks on his neck, and his eyes are, like, bloodshot, like the blood vessels
okay.
in his eyes. So they tell him, like, somebody tried to strangle you.
Wow.
And he was like, okay, cool. I'm not pressing charges.
That's weird.
Well, it seems to be a running theme with the victims that get away is that they just don't, I mean, I don't know why, they just don't press charges.
Maybe they were, like, into it.
I don't think they were into it. I think that they were embarrassed. I think they may have been shamed for pressing charges or taken seriously. because that is the time frame again. So neither of them sought out charges against Dennis, which sucks. But during this time period, like I said, it's just how it was. So this kind of thing happened a lot in the Jeffrey Dahmer case, which I know you probably have no idea about.
I know a little bit about Jeffrey Dahmer because you made me watch that movie the one time.
Well, that was about his life prior to the killing.
Yeah, that dude's a weirdo too.
Yeah, so this, I've noticed there's a lot of similarities in these two cases.
Interesting.
So they actually pegged him as the British Jeffrey Dahmer, which is not
Did you really have to use the word pegged?
Okay, so that was probably poor wording on my part.
Wow.
That's not a title I would ever want, just saying.
What, a pegger? Yeah, I wouldn't want you to have it either.
No. The British Jeffrey Dahmer.
Oh, okay.
His next victim was named Billy Sutherland. He was 27. After this one, it was 24-year-old Malcolm Barlow, and he actually had a learning disability and no parents. Like, his parents were deceased. So not only did he have nobody advocating for him, but he also had a learning disability, so he wasn't able to, like, properly advocate for himself, and Dennis took full advantage of that.
Huh.
And they were both strangled to death. By 1981, Dennis had killed 12 men in this apartment, and he was running out of places to put the bodies. At one point, he had six different bodies in his apartment, like I said earlier. He began to dismember the bodies. He would bury parts of them. He would burn parts of them. After having them burnt, he would, like, stomp on the bones and stuff to, like, break them up, make them look like ashes instead of just clumps.
This is so disturbing. This is the most disturbing episode we've had. In my opinion, this is the one for me.
These details, I don't like to go into details of cases like this but they're important.
No, I'm not saying later. Don't do it. I'm saying this is just crazy.
Saying for this case specifically, the way he disposed of the bodies is ultimately what makes him get caught.
Okay.
So he's putting, like I said, the fleshy parts
in the toilet.
In the toilet, down the sink, etc. Just clogging up those drains with stuff.
Right.
Okay. So his neighbors complained of the smell, but Dennis was like, yeah, this building just has really poor structure. And that's probably why it smells so bad. Like, I'm sorry that you didn't nail these two boards together very well. So that's probably causing it to stink. That doesn't even make sense.
I mean, yeah. Or if he was trying to say, like, they don't upkeep it, like, maybe it looked dirty.
Maybe. March of 1982, he invited over John Howlett for a drink. John fell asleep and Dennis begins to strangle him. John woke up and began to fight back, and he almost overpowered Dennis, but John ended up going unconscious after a few minutes of attempting to fight him off. After realizing John was still alive and not awake, Dennis filled his bathtub up and submerged John for 5 minutes, killing him by drowning. He dismembered and disposed of the body later in the same way that he did the other ones. And then he repeated the process of strangling and filling up the bathtub, submerging the body with his next victim, Carl Stotter. But when he pulled Carl out of the tub, Dennis's dog Bleep, that was his dog's name, began to lick Carl's face.
That's weird.
And his dog, he said, my dog does not interact with the dead ones. He only interacts with the ones that are alive. Or he doesn't interact with the dead ones. He only interacts with the ones that are still alive.
Okay.
So he starts licking Carl's face. And so he goes over and investigates. And he realizes that Carl was still alive. So Dennis decides to resuscitate him. And later told him that he accidentally strangled himself because Carl had been sleeping in a sleeping bag prior to getting strangled.
Okay.
And he said, you got stuck in the sleeping bag's zipper and it must have like strangled you. And so over the next couple of days, he would fall in and out of unconsciousness, and he had flashes of being strangled and being drowned. And Carl asked him, did you do something to me? And he's like, no, those just must be nightmares because I didn't do anything. Like, you must have just strangled yourself with the sleeping bag. And so he's like, you can just sit in this cold water and it'll help you recover from the shock of everything and then you'll be fine.
Okay.
And so Carl was like, I'm actually good. And he left. And never told the police.
How interesting.
His next victim was Graham Allen. He invited him over for food, and while they were eating an omelet, Dennis strangled him to death and placed him in the bathtub for 3 days. He actually had to request time off of work to dismember and dispose of the corpse. On January 26, 1983, Dennis killed his final victim, Stephen Sinclair, which... full circle, we're going back to the same Steven, name, Steven. Which is weird. He strangled Steven while Steven was in an alcohol and drug-induced state. After doing so, he removed bandages on Steven's wrist to discover that just days before he had attempted to take his own life. He sexually assaulted the body and slept next to it, and when he woke up, he dismembered it, placed it in different bags, put some down the drain, and whatever. He actually used the bandages that were on Steven's wrist to seal the bags up.
No way. Just
weird little tidbit there. So in February 1983, one of the other tenants in the building called and was like, listen, like, something's backed up. Like, we need this fixed.
Ew.
So
They
called up the drain specialist, Dino Rod, and they investigated the blockage. They discovered rotting human remains. Ugh. And So they were going to do a full investigation the next day, and everybody was going to be inspected. Like, all the houses were going to be looked, or apartments were going to be looked into. And that night, he was spotted by another tenant who was, like, suspicious of him anyways, trying to clean the stuff out of the drains before they came back.
No way.
Yes. Idiot. Okay. He told a coworker, if I'm not in tomorrow, I'll either be ill, dead, or in jail.
That's so, not suspicious.
Yeah, so he was met on the evening of February 9th by Detective Chief Inspector Jay, who informed him that they wished to question him in relation to human remains that had been discovered in the drains.
Uh-oh.
So upon entering the apartment, there was a foul odor, like...
So they already have a smell.
They already know. And they were like, what's the smell? And he's like, you know what? He's like, everything that you're looking for, it's here. It's in the apartment. Okay, so he, like, aside from all the other weird stuff, he kept a lot of the parts. He would, like, cook them and just preserve them. I don't think he ate them.
That's so gross.
I didn't see anything about that, but he did keep
that. Would like, be more Dahmer,
the heads and stuff.
Ooh.
So, and like, we're not a super graphic podcast, so I mean, this isn't something we typically go into, is the details like this, but I feel like it's relevant because it's a big role in how he got caught.
Right.
Upon his arrest, he immediately provided details about the killing spree. He admitted to killing 15 young men. Despite receiving legal caution, he was like, you know, I did it. He also admitted to attempting to murder 7 other people, but he could only name 4 of his victims.
How weird.
Yeah. At no point did he show any remorse, and he had no desire to ever be free again. After the confession, he was held at the Brixton prison pending the trial, and he wrote there over 50 notebooks of his memories to assist the prosecution of just like what he did. He would fire his legal counsel and then rehire them and then fire them and then rehire them. And he would just play games like for no reason. His trial commenced on October 24th, 1983, and he was charged with 6 counts of murder and 2 charges of attempted murder, and he pled not guilty to all the charges.
No way.
After he said, told them he did it.
That doesn't even make sense.
Doesn't matter. You can do that. Citing diminished responsibility due to mental defect. So he's saying, I did do it, but it's due to a mental illness, so it's not my fault.
Right, he just wants his grandpa to come back.
Oh my gosh. So the jury on November 3rd, 1983 were unable to reach a unanimous verdict, sorry. And the following day, the judge was like, we'll just accept the majority, that's fine. Yeah.
Can you do that?
Apparently you can there. And they delivered a verdict of guilty on all 6 counts of murder. The judge sentenced him to life in prison without eligibility for parole for at least 25 years. So, on May 12th, 2019, Dennis died as a result of complications following a stomach surgery at the age of 72 while being incarcerated at the Full Sutton Prison in East Yorkshire, England. He was transferred to a hospital in York on May 10th, suffering from abdominal pains during the procedure. He suffered a blood clot and later died. Autopsy ruled his death was a pulmonary embolism and a retroperitoneal hemorrhage. So it sounds like his heart had a blood clot in it, like an, you know, like a... Anyways.
Yeah, that's awful.
So he died in 2019. Or 2018, I'm sorry. Due to a surgery complication, but he was going to be in prison the rest of his life anyways. But...
Yep. Wow.
And that is the story. You're welcome, Kay. You'll have to let me know.
Yeah, that was a... Ew.
Yeah, that was a lot. That was... And when I was researching, I was just like... Ew.
I've never been like so creeped out by one of these things. Like, this is the type of stuff I imagine that you listen to.
Well,
minus, well, I guess with the addition of the wig and the makeup.
There was no wig and makeup, but I think you're thinking of like, what's that movie? It puts the lotion on the skin.
Yeah, I was thinking of that too. Like, yeah.
Joe Dirt. And then
kind of like that.
What's the other movie that he's in? It's got the Hannibal Lecter. Is it Hannibal?
Oh, Lecter? Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm thinking that's what you're thinking of. But anyways.
Maybe.
So now I guess we can transition over to Curtis's Conspiracy Corner to end on possibly a lighter note.
Well, as hard as it is to follow that, I have nothing this week. I'm just kidding.
Oh my god!
The look on Ashley's face.
Okay, well, I guess this is gonna be a short podcast tonight. So everybody, have a great rest of your day.
This is what happens when we wait until midnight.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. Okay, so this week, a little bit interesting. So, have you ever heard of Project MK Ultra?
Yeah.
Okay, well,
I'm kidding.
Oh, I'm finding deeper conspiracy theories because now I'm starting to like search for them, so it's not just ones that I've heard of. Okay.
Okay.
So, or it was also known as MK Ultra, you know, minus the project. So.
So what is it?
I don't understand like why it like literally puts it as both. So this was a program that was designed and undertaken by the CIA.
Okay.
So, the United States Central Intelligence Agency.
I don't know what the CIA is.
Okay. Well, it gets crazy.
Okay.
So, I'm just going to read this section of it, so that way there's a good understanding of what actually happened. The experiments were, and this is coming off Wikipedia, so sorry, it's not like factual, but.
We're taking this.
Google's taking a lot off.
With a grain of salt.
Yeah.
Well, we take all the conspiracy theories with a grain of salt.
You do. I mean, what? The experiments were intended to develop procedures and identify drugs such as LSD that could be used in interrogations to weaken individuals' forced confessions through brainwashing and psychological torture.
Okay, so when in the first half, I thought you were going to go with just experimenting with drugs to see the effects on the human body, but you definitely took it somewhere else, so okay.
No, so they were using, like, high doses. High doses.
I mean, at what point does reality end for them?
When they're dead.
And nothing's real anyway, so what does it matter what they say?
I guess. Well, they're doing it to, like, break down, like, your nature. So that way, like, if you're lying about something, you're going to tell the truth because it's broken. Right? Because you're in a deep mental state.
Okay, but I feel like if you're on LSD, the computer would look like it was melting, so.
Right.
What's
well, they,
really real at that
not point? Only did they do that, that's where it started. Then they moved on to other things, like other chemicals, electroshocks, hypnosis, sensory deprivation, isolation, and verbal and sexual abuse, in addition to other forms of torture. Ooh, this reminds me of that story in Russia where they kept the people awake for days. Do you remember that?
Oh, and they went crazy. They started dreaming. While they were awake.
Oh, that one's crazy.
You know why your body forces you into that? It's because your body needs sleep to, like, regenerate the cells.
Right.
It's a big part of it.
I totally forgot we were supposed to do a part two this week, and I just remembered. I'm sorry, everybody. We didn't do the part two.
Oh, my gosh.
Ashley threw me off this week.
I'm sorry.
So, anyways, so they had related these in other experiments that continued, as in Project Bluebird and Project Artichoke.
I'm sorry, but this sounds more like a true crime case, so.
Well, kind of. So they started this in 1953, but then it ended up, like, having lots of issues.
You don't say.
With, like, a lot of contacts of people. And so they were, like, struggling between 64 and 67, and they finally stopped it in 1973, or so they say they did.
Oh, my gosh.
Right, well, so they just dragged this out for 24 years.
Shout out to you for
Winding up
your conspiracy theory with my case.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. So it gets better. So the public didn't even find out about this. Starting to find out about it. Until 1975.
So this 2 years in America.
Yes, this happened in America.
Where? Like underground or?
Well, I would assume so. It's the CIA.
Okay.
So the CIA has, you know, multiple places that they could, I'm sure, where people would have no idea what's going on.
No, that just happens in movies.
So the public found out about this, though, think about it, in 1975. So 2 years after the experiments were like, yep, we're done, that's when the American public started to find out.
Was there a whistleblower?
Kind of. So it was brought to you by the Church Committee of the United States and Gerald Ford's United States President's Commission of CIA Activities within the United States. It was like a group that was designed to look at the CIA.
Okay. I just feel like certain things, they're kind of like low-key trying to get caught. Because I feel like they could just keep it all a secret if they wanted to, but they're like...
Yeah, but if there's whistleblowers and stuff, like, you can't keep out. So 75, like, people are like irate. Like,
I'm sure they were.
Right? So the first bit of information that comes out was an act that was formed called the Freedom of Information Act. I'm sure you've heard of it by now.
I've heard of it.
It was passed in 1977. And that's when they started to release some of the documents, which over 20,000 documents were released in Senate hearings about MKUltra. So okay, let me put this in perspective for you. So that was in 1977. So 4 years after the stop, 20,000 documents get released.
So here's my question. What part of this, because this sounds like it's all recorded, so which part of it is the conspiracy?
Oh, I'm not done.
Okay, sorry.
We're still going.
All right.
See, so this was a conspiracy, and people try to debunk it, like today when they say, oh, a conspiracy isn't real, and then we find out later that it actually was real.
We won't mention any.
So, 1977, 4 years after it was halted, 20,000 documents come out.
And all those people were like,
no, we're not done. I'm just asking, like, you understand this, right?
Yeah, 20,000 documents come out.
4 years later. The next set of documents that were released about MKUltra was in 2001.
What?
Yeah, July in 2001.
That's like, okay.
Yeah, 24 years after that.
They came out in 76?
I'm not even done.
And then 2001.
Yeah, July of 2001.
Okay.
The next set that was released was December of 2018.
Hold on a second.
So another 17 years for this information.
Freedom
but this,
of information, but we only release it once every 20 years.
But this information that comes out is the most disgusting part.
Oh my god.
So they use these drugs, they use brain shock and everything else, right?
Torture, basically. Right. Literally crimes against humanity.
So the last documents that were declassified just 4 years ago, they found out that they were able to implant inside dogs and mess with their brain waves, and that they could make the dogs run, turn, and stop with a remote control with implants that they put in the dog's brain.
Okay, so why don't you just get like a... Have you ever seen one of those for real pets?
Yes.
Why not just get a for real pet? Why you gotta have a remote control human dog? Not human dog. Like, real life dog.
So, I don't know. I mean, I guess it's a funny question.
Funny.
But yeah, because you're calling it like a robot
dog. People then? I don't want to be...
Well, yeah, all the documents haven't been released yet. It's 2018. And guess where this all started? Because, like I say all the time, and I've already said in this podcast...
History repeats itself.
History repeats itself, thank you. All this came...
It all came from Nazi Germany.
Nazi Germany.
Shut up.
Thank you. From when they were experimenting on people from Kinzer's research. And Kinzer comes through and says that the CIA... is the continuation of the Nazi experiments and was hidden propaganda from the U.S.
You know what the crazy thing is about the whole Germany thing?
What?
Is that people think, like, there are still some people, okay, one, that if you say, what's the Holocaust, they're like, I don't know. And then some people are like, no, it never happened.
Yeah, there are people that are convinced that it never happened. I know,
people
it's insane.
Think it's just a conspiracy theory. It's literally in history books.
I know. Almost an entire race got wiped off the face of the earth, and people don't even know what it is or how it happened. And you know what the sad part is? Like the saddest part to me is that wasn't even 100 years ago in history. 80 years ago, we lost like 6.1 million Jews.
Still alive. Holocaust survivors still alive with the tattoo on them. And people say it probably didn't happen. Are you kidding? That's insane to me.
Sorry, we just heard like a weird noise outside our house. It sounded like fireworks or something.
Kind of did. By the way,
it's a CIA rolling up.
Actually,
boom, 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 get out.
You don't want to talk about that. You don't want to talk about that. No, this is just a conspiracy. We don't believe, or we don't not believe.
Say it for yourself. I believe quite a few of these. CIA is rolling up.
Oh my gosh.
Well, everybody, we gotta get going.
Like, tapping like the ground outside with some, like, I don't know.
Yeah, we've never heard this noise before, but now we got 8 black Yukons pulling up.
Why are we gonna drive Yukons? What, they drive an Escalade? It's the government. Escalades are nicer.
I mean, I guess.
Alright. Well, hold on. I guess we didn't talk about which people did they pick for these subjects.
Oh, you know what? I didn't even actually see anything. But I would imagine...
Like criminals, like prisoners and stuff.
So I didn't see anything about it, but I would guess... Because, like, today, right? So you can sign yourself up and make money off of volunteering yourself for programs like, you know, different medications. Like, this is the type of stuff that you sign up for. So, I mean, I'd imagine that this was probably around the same thing. Like, you know how there's like testing trials for vaccines?
But this seems like nobody would willingly sign up knowing that it could be like this.
Nobody's gonna willingly sign up if they know they're gonna be harmed, but if they know they have a chance of making money off of it, they usually just do it and then hope nothing bad happens.
Everything really does have a price.
It does, and your life is only worth what you make it, so. Or what you value it as, I guess, would make more sense.
Yeah, what you value it. Like everybody has a number, basically. I don't. Mm-mm. I don't care how much money they offered me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You wouldn't want to have an implant in your brain and they can control you with a remote?
Yeah, what are they going to do? Control how I spend that money, too. No, thank you.
They're going to pay you to do that, and then I'm going to take that money and buy it so I can control you with the remote.
I'm sure that you would. Oh my god!
Can we get some music in the podcast and get that Britney Spears "I'm a Slave" for you? Oh my
god! I'm editing that out.
Sheesh.
Anyways, so if you would like to send us an email, you can send us an email at partnersincrimethepodcast@gmail.com. And if you want to follow us on Instagram, you can follow us on Instagram at Partners in Crime, the podcast. That's it. Like, that's the whole handle. So, otherwise, thank you for listening.
Thank you.
Sorry, my husband doesn't have manners. And we hope you keep listening. And
what? I was just watching you ramble and you were like, you should be answering this.
I know. I'm looking at you like with the glare, like, say something. I don't want to be the only one ending this. So, sorry. He's still new here. Yeah. So that's it. You got anything else to add?
No.
All right. Well, have a good day.
Have a good night, everybody.
See you later. Goodbye.